Philip Earl Hall. Russell Boyd Hall.
Joy, you say go pre-mine and...
Okay.
So does anyone remember what we've discussed previous to this?
Chapter 18?
What is chapter 18 called? Hearing about a description of the topics which will be covered in these cantos 7, 8, and 9. So there is a basic description or summary being given of the different pastimes. And then we'll hear tonight, we will begin the pastime of how Diti desires to cure Lord Indra. And these things will be told in the next several cantos. In the next canto, we'll hear straight. First of all, about the children of Diti, the two twins, whose names were?
Hiranyaksha.
Hiranyaksha Guru. The biggest demons in history. Extremely powerful asuras. So tonight, we'll begin with verse 15. That's where we are up to. The wife of Palada was named Tamani. She gave birth to two sons named Vatapi and Ilvala. When Agastyamuni became Ilvala's guest, Ilvala served him a feast by cooking Vatapi, who was in the shape of a ram. So it appears here that Agastyamuni is eating sheep flesh. So there are mentions in the Vedas, in different places, in the Puranas, there is mention that sometimes the sages would even eat flesh. Different things are mentioned there. As for why this is happening, I cannot be sure. But sometimes it is mentioned. There are different places, even here in the Bhagavad Gita. It's being mentioned that one of the sages is eating flesh, Agastya, who is a very powerful sage. Okay. So why this is taking place, I'm not sure. I can't explain what the answer is. Yes. But somehow there is some past on that.
Can I make a comment?
Both these guys are Vatapi and Ilvala. Their job was whenever they would see a person, then a wonderful feast is prepared by Ilvala of Vatapi and served to the guest. After guest takes the food, then Ilvala would call Vatapi, then Vatapi would tear open the abdomen and come out. And then they would eat the flesh of that person, Brahman or Ilvala. That used to be their routine there. But then when Agastya came, they said they could do the same trick on him. So they did the same thing. But then Agastya said, where is Vatapi? He is already digested. So in that way, the Vatapi's problem was ridden by Agastya.
Where is this person?
Childhood, I know. Maybe Telugu Bhagavatam, because we hear Bhagavatam
from Ramayana.
So in Telugu we have Potana is a well-known devotee of Lord Ramachandra. He transliterated and translated Bhagavatam into Telugu by the blessings of Lord Ramachandra. Lord Ramachandra appears to him or inspires him to write. It's not just writing but translating. Word to word from Sanskrit to Telugu, he translates. And then give word to word meaning in Telugu and then write a commentary. So, and entire Andhra knows portion of Bhagavatam. So we hear it.
Thank you. Good to have you on the call. Please come in. Any other points? Okay. The wife of Anuhlada was named Surya. She gave birth to two sons named Bashkala and Mahisha. Prahlad had one son, Virochana, who his wife gave birth to Bali Maharaj. So you'll see in this line of asuras coming from Aditi, Aditi gave birth to the devatas, the demigods, and Aditi gave birth to the asuras. So you see that in the line of asuras, two great devotees have appeared, Prahlad and Bali Maharaj. And both of them are Mahajanas. And one will appear in Canto 7, one will appear in Canto 8. So, this is one of the important points in the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that devotees cannot be accepted according to external category or external designation. In other words, sometimes we hear people say that the Indian gurus are bona fide, but the Western gurus are not bona fide. And you hear all sorts of things. But here in the Bhagavatam, we have two of the Mahajans are asuras. So, already it's there in the Bhagavatam. So when people say these things, it is not the Bhagavat philosophy. It is not the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches, you cannot judge the devotee or the person based on the external circumstances. You have to look at their bhakti or their devotion. And then we accept them according to their devotional qualification. So even Prahlad and Bali were born in Asuric families, but still they were the greatest devotees. Ritrasura was born in an Asuric family, but he was a great devotee. So we can't judge the devotees externally. This is something we have to be very careful of, judging the devotees externally. We have to learn how to do this. Don't judge the devotees according to their external characteristics. Don't judge the devotees by the clothes that they wear. Just because they come to the Bhakti Vaibhav class and they're not wearing dhotis and girdles, then you cannot judge them. You cannot say they're not devotees just because they're not wearing dhotis and girdles. Of course, it's very good if you do wear dhotis and girdles. That's very auspicious. But if the dhoti is not, then we cannot judge. We cannot say they're not devotees. So you cannot judge devotees according to external qualification, according to the body, like that. We have to accept the devotees according to their devotional qualification, their bhakti. Any points so far?
I think so. It's a sense of pride, false pride. I've encountered a couple of people from India who say that, oh, we have to hear from a white man about Bhagavatam or Bhakti, but you don't know.
Yeah, it's just another feature of false ego. It's there, it's just bodily consciousness, which is there in every. It's there in the material world. And sometimes it comes in the spiritual circles also. His party used to study the Vedas.
Pythagoras' theory comes from Vedas.
What's that?
Pythagoras' theory
is there?
Pythagoras theorem comes from the Vedas.
Pythagoras.
And this, that's a famous theory.
Yeah, yeah. The ancient Greeks used to study Socrates and Aristotle and Plato and Pythagoras. All these people used to study the Vedas as well. Because India was connected to the rest of the world in the past. Because actually, as it describes in the Bhagavad Gita, in the pastime of Parashuram, that all of the dynasties, the Kshatriya dynasties, were driven out of India by Parashuram. And they settled around the world. They became the Romans and the Greeks and the Egyptians and the Mongolians and the Aztecs and the Mayans and all these different ancient cultures. That's why there's so many similarities between all the cultures. All the gods are the same. The Norse gods. If you look at the Norse gods and the Greek gods and the Roman gods, they're the same as the Vedic gods. Just different names of them. So it was all connected in the past. The culture was connected.
I heard one of the Prabhupada's lecture that these European countries were mostly Aryans, which moved from the other side of India to that part. And because they were already, they already knew about the Vedic knowledge, that's why they carried the Vedas with them. And that's why, like, Germany is very advanced in the machinery, mechanical engineering side of it, because they know all those processes
or phenomena
from the Vedas.
Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
It comes from the Vedas.
All the aeronautic science, the planes, like France, they make planes. So all that knowledge is from the Vedas.
Good. Any other points?
You know, Prabhupada said also in the lectures in New York that all the devotees who have come to him, that they are all Aryans, as he said.
Yeah.
And they, you have been sent by Mahaprabhu to me. You are waiting for the opportunity for me to come to USA so you can participate in the movement.
Prabhupada said that the Jews are Vaishyas.
Yeah.
And they're very famous for being good at business. Many of the gurus in our movement are coming from Jewish background. Small Krishna Maharaj, Sridhananda Maharaj, Purujan Prabhu, many of them are coming from Jewish background.
Radhanath Swami.
Radhanath Swami is. Yeah, so many coming from Jewish. Any other points? Yeah. Thereafter, Bali Maharaj begot 100 sons in the womb of Ashana. Of these 100 sons, King Bana was the eldest. The activities of Bali Maharaj, which are very laudable, will be described later in the 8th canto. So in the 8th canto, we hear a wonderful description of the pastime of Bali Maharaj. Very detailed description of how he represents, as we're discussing the Bhagavad Gita this morning, he represents the process of Atmanivedanam, or surrendering everything to Krishna. So Bali Maharaj will teach us about this particular principle when we get to the 8th canto of the Bhagavad Gita. So the year after next we plan to study the 8th canto of the Bhagavad Gita. Since King Bana was a great worshipper of Lord Shiva, he became one of Lord Shiva's most celebrated associates. Even now, Lord Shiva protects King Bana's capital and always stands beside him. So is this Bana Sura? This will be mentioned in the 10th canto, this personality, Bana Sura. This will be told in detail in the 10th canto. How he fought with Krishna, like that. So, the whole pastime will be there to show that Krishna is supreme. I think that's the fight where Krishna defeats Lord Shiva. So it shows that Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the philosophy of the Bhagavatam and ultimately the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So all of these things which are being mentioned now will be described in detail in the future cantos. The 49 Marut demigods were also born from the womb of Diti. None of them had sons. Although they were born of Diti, King Indra gave them a position as demigods.
I think the humans can be elevated to position as demigods when their aesthetic character is reformed. There are two kinds of men throughout the universe. Those who are devotees of Lord Vishnu are called demigods, and those who are just the opposite are called demons. Given that demons can be transformed into demigods, as the statement of this verse proves.
Any points?
Because the living entities are classified of two categories. One who believes in Vishnu and who doesn't believe in Vishnu. Somebody who doesn't believe in Vishnu is called an atheist. Somebody who believes in Vishnu is called a living one.
Is the subject matter of the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Any other points?
Those six sons who were Balaram and Krishna were born, were they? What were they? Which sons killed them? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They were Maruts?
I can't remember. There's a description of who they were, but I can't remember.
Very unusual to see that the demons are elevated by the king of the demigods to the position of the demigods. Do we have any understanding? Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains one of the reasons why Indra would do that.
How are they to that point? The asuras to the demigods? As far as I understand, it's because they had the quality of demigods. So because they had quality, then he gave them the position of demigods. There's nothing extra mentioned. There's no pastime toll or anything like that. So that's as far as I understand. Any other
questions? the sons of Devaki were, I think, Maruts, who offended Lord Brahma when he ran after his daughter. That's why Brahma chose them.
Yeah, there's a description of who they were. I just can't remember all the details about the description. There is a description. We'll hear about that in 4 years' time when we get to the 10th point. Any other points? So we're hearing the Bhagavatam once again describing that if one elevates oneself through the modes of nature, then one develops auspicious qualities. So as we've discussed in the last three classes, if by elevating oneself to the mode of goodness, you develop good qualities. Because in the mode of goodness, there are many auspicious qualities which are mentioned by Krishna in the later chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. If one practices or cultivates consciousness in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion, then one develops qualities in those modes, which are inauspicious qualities. But by cultivating the mode of goodness, then gradually you develop good qualities. Now, these asuras, even though they were born in the family of asuras or the body of asuras, they were given the position of demigods. Right? Why? Because they had the qualification of demigods. So we see also in ISKCON, you could say that so many of our senior members in our society have been given a very powerful positions in our society because they've developed all good qualities. Yashasti Bhakti Bhagavati Kinchana is described in the 5th canto of the Bhagavatam, that if one does devotional service to Krishna, one can develop all the good qualities of the demigods. And if one develops all the good qualities of the demigods, then one can take to elevated positions. So normally, one can do this through elevating oneself or cultivating the mood of goodness, then one at all its good qualities. However, Srila Prabhupada was once on a plane, or getting on a plane, with Indradyumna Swami, and Prabhupada said to Indradyumna Swami, he said that non-devotees have no good qualities. And he said to Indradyumna Swami, do you understand? And then Indradyumna Swami just looked at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada repeated himself. He said, the non-devotees have no good qualities. Do you understand? So he repeated this three times to Indradyumna Swami, that the non-devotees have no good qualities. Do you understand? The reason is because the modes of material nature constantly fluctuate. So even if a non-devotee has good qualities in association with the mode of goodness, in a future lifetime or later in this lifetime, through association with the lower modes of nature, he will lose his position in due course of time, and then his good qualities will be lost. Whereas for a devotee, devotional service is eternal. Devotional service is not a temporary situation. Krishna explains that in the Bhagavad Gita. Any devotional service is not lost. So a devotee, once he cultivates good qualities, those good qualities, they stay in his person. And they increase in his person. So a devotee, because he's in contact with the internal energy of Krishna, all good qualities manifest within his consciousness, and they remain and they become stronger and stronger, more and more profound. So that is the potency of devotional service. So even these personalities, they were born in the wombs of asuras, but they took birth in, or not took birth, but they were elevated to the position of demigods due to their excellent qualities. Any points?
This person, once again, that by birth you can't define somebody's quality.
Which is the whole philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is also the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Prabhupada says, who is the ideal personality who exemplifies the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya's entire philosophy was based on this point. Lord Chaitanya taught us that we would not accept devotees according to external circumstances. And one of the prime examples of that was Srila Haridas Thakur, who was made the Namacharya by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though he was apparently born in a low-class family, a Muslim family. But still, he was considered to be the topmost devotee. So that's the entire philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of the integral points of his teachings. And one of the integral points is Lord Chaitanya's entire philosophy is based upon the Srimad Bhagavatam. So one of the integral points of the Bhagavatam of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is that you cannot judge a devotee according to external circumstances. Any points?
In the Indian academic school books and history books especially, they refer to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a great social reformer, making Hinduism accessible to people of all backgrounds. That's not in the, that's presented in this thing.
So what is our opinion of that?
Him as a social reformer, or him making it accessible to the church?
And the fact that they see him as being a great saint.
They don't mention it in that
way. How do they mention it?
Great social reformer.
So how do we see that saint? No, no, the fact that they see Lord Chaitanya as, we see him as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they see him as being a great saint. So how do we see that?
I think it is based on the demonic caste system in the country. Therefore, there is a tendency for providing, on a political basis, the reservation for backward community and children caste, that they are not accepted as part of the mainstream society. So here is a gentleman who is saying that, well, that's not the case. Somebody should not be considered based on their birth, but based on quality.
No, that's a different point. The point I'm trying to make is that the scholars, they see Lord Chaitanya not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but we do see him like that.
So what is our opinion of their statements that he was a great saint, as opposed to being the Supreme Lord himself?
We don't accept their statement. It's a misunderstanding.
No, it's an incomplete statement.
It's an incomplete statement. They don't have complete knowledge. Maybe he accepted that one aspect of it.
It's an incomplete statement. We know that philosophically, but how do we deal with it? How do we accept it?
So, at least the scholars are accepting that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was successful in establishing, you know, the principles based on the way of life based on shastras. At least the scholars are appreciating that. And they cannot have this understanding of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without the mercy of a devotee. So just by saying his basically pastimes, his teachings, and his writings, they're able to come to the performance that he has established the right religious principles.
And I suppose we can say that they're judging his activity on his bodily part, that his activity works towards other people's cars or birth or things like that, which is in the body. They're not seeing it from the spiritual.
Yeah, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he mentions that even if the scholars, they see Lord Chaitanya not as the Supreme Lord himself, but as a great saint, he said still they make spiritual advancement. So we encourage them. At least they see the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they appreciate that. And then if they see him as being a great saint, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says then we encourage that. Because at least they accept his philosophy, at least they accept him as a great personality. And in due course of time, they may become more purified, and then they can accept him as being the Supreme Lord himself. So if someone says that, then we can at least encourage them. That we don't necessarily have to defeat them on the spot and tell them, no, he is not a saint, he is the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even if they see him like that, then gradually they can become elevated and purified. And in due course of time, then we can say to him, actually, we see him as being the Supreme Lord himself. That's all. Any other points?
And many people in Andhra, I believe, they name their children as Chaitanya. Especially the border districts of Andhra Pradesh and Odisha, that's sorry, part of the region, they name their children as Chaitanya. And there are education institutions in Andhra Pradesh which are named as Chaitanya. And then Plavishwar, what does that mean?
Are you from Andhra Pradesh?
Yes, Claude. Yes and no.
Oh, talking. Where are you from?
Gujarat. We know that he is Supreme Personality, whomsoever he met during the course of South India or in made them pure devotee. Even Nanak, Guru Nanak, who is the chief in the Sikh community. The Vrindavan is written, Nanak Dukhiya Sab Sansara Sukhiya De Naam Adhara. So that is the basis of the philosophy. What they are saying, anybody who is in the shelter of the Holy Name, he is the only person who is happy in the whole world. This is what it is in Vrindavan on so many places in Hindi. Nanak Dukhiya Sab Sansara Sukhiya Je Naam Adhara. Anybody who is taking shelter of the Holy Name is the only happy person. So his philosophy has gone to so many places. So it is only the Supreme Personality who can do that. Otherwise, nobody has the capacity of making it. Or a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada.
Actually, he is not spreading Hinduism. He is Sanatana Dharma, which is the Vaishnava. So he was not spreading Hinduism, so he probably said. So Sanatana Dharma, which is the eternal religion.
Any other comments?
King Parikshit inquired, "My dear Lord, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with a demoniac mentality. Why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? My dear Brahmana, I and all the sages present with me are eager to know about this. Therefore, O great soul, kindly explain to us the reason. Sri Suta Goswami said, O great sage, Shomaka, after hearing Maharaj Pariksha speak respectfully and briefly on topics essential to hear, Shukadeva Goswami, who was well aware of everything, praised his endeavor with great pleasure and replied.
Maharaj Pariksha's question was very much appreciated by Shukadeva Goswami because although it was composed of a small number of words, it contained meaningful inquiries about how the son of Riti, although born as demon, became demigods. Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura stresses that even though Riti was very envious, her heart was purified because of her devotional attitude. Another significant topic is that although Kashyapamuni was a learned scholar and was advanced in spiritual consciousness, he nonetheless fell a victim to an inducement of his suitable wife. All these questions were posed in a small number of words, and therefore Sukadeva Goswami very much appreciated Maharaj Pariksha's inquiry.
So, any points here?
In Ramayana also, there was Kekai, she was very beautiful, and she gave trouble to Maharaj Dashrath, and Lord Rama was sent for 14 years. So the beautiful wife is a great tragedy, one can say.
Anything else? So, the first point is that Pariksha Maharaj is very eager to hear about the next subject matter. So this is the one of the essential qualities in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that the hearer of the Bhagavatam must be very eager to hear the subject matter. And this churns the ocean of nectar. Or in other words, it brings out the rasa from the Bhagavatam. So it says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura explains in the beginning of the 10th canto in his commentary, that when the Bhagavatam is being recited, the speaker becomes the most purified. And the person who speaks the Bhagavatam, he becomes the most purified. Because he is listening the most attentively. Why is he listening the most attentively?
Because he's speaking.
Because he's speaking. Very hard to fall asleep when you're speaking. Like that. Have you ever fallen asleep while you're speaking to someone?
No.
Have you ever seen someone giving the Bhagavatam class and they fall asleep? The only person I saw was His Holiness Tripitaka Swami. Sometimes he would be speaking and he would begin to nod off while he was speaking because he was pushing himself so much in his preaching. He was traveling around the world so much that sometimes you could give him class in the middle of class and he'd nod off and then he'd kind of begin to speak again. So the speaker becomes the most purified, and then it says the inquirer, then he also becomes the second most purified. When someone is inquiring, asking questions in the Bhagavatam class. So when we're hearing Bhagavatam, we should be asking questions in our mind. Why is it like that? Why is it like that? Many of the questions will be answered just by listening. But during the class or at the end of the class, if there's anything which is not understood, then you should ask questions. If you're listening with an inquisitive mind, then you will also stay awake. You will also be attentive and you'll get the benefit of the Bhagavad Gita. So we should listen carefully. So it says the speaker gets the most benefit, the inquiry gets the second most benefit, and those who are hearing, they also get the benefit if they stay awake. Of course, there is that pastime which explains that Nidra Devi, that means the personification of sleep, she once came to the Lord and she said that I cannot touch your devotees. Nidra said, I cannot touch your devotees. Your devotees do not sleep. Because they are always engaged in your service, so they do not sleep. So I cannot have any control on them. So please give me some benediction that I can have some effect on them. And the Lord said, okay, then you can have some effect on them during the Bhagavad Gita class. So it used to be a joke in ISKCON that if you want a cure for insomnia, insomnia means the disease where you cannot sleep. If you want a cure for that, the cure is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It means to go to sleep. But quite often you sleep, devotees say sleep like that. In the Bhakti Vaibhav course, they do not do it so much because devotees are coming here with a questioning mind. In other words, they're listening very attentively and they're inquiring submissively. So because they have an inquiring mind, then they do not fall asleep. Generally, that does not happen. Even in the classes in the morning, it's more common that devotees will nod off at that. But I always tell the devotees when I'm giving the classes in the morning, I always wake them up. If I see them sleeping, I say, wake up. In front of the whole class, I say, wake up. Like that. Or I just look straight at them and I say, do not sleep in the Bhagavad Gita class. Or I ask them to stand up like that. So the devotees will get the benefit. Actually, it's offensive to sleep in front of the deities. It's actually offensive to sleep in the Bhagavad Gita class. It's a small upper right. So it's not proper, it's not correct. If you need to sleep, then you should go and take rest. Just like in Prabhupada's time, when Prabhupada was here, Prabhupada was only sleeping 2 or 3 hours a day. So many of the devotees in the movement were only sleeping 5 hours, 6 hours a day, really pushing themselves a lot. So even when Prabhupada was giving class, or giving a darshan in Mumbai, you know, one time one devotee, he was sitting there, and he was so tired, he was, and his head hit the marble. And Prabhupada looked, and he said, go and take rest. Go and take rest. So if you want to sleep, don't sleep in the Bhagavad Gita class. If you want to sleep, go and sleep in your bed. Take rest. But don't sleep in the Bhagavad Gita class. It is not auspicious. It's also not auspicious to sleep in front of the deities. It's offensive. It says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, do not sleep in front of the deities. So this should not be done. So the Bhagavad Gita becomes relishable for the speaker and for the listener when the listeners are inquiring submissively, or when they're asking pertinent questions, then the speaker becomes very enlightened. They're asking such nice questions that he becomes inspired to speak and to reveal his heart. So this is the system in the hearing the Bhagavad Gita. So here, Shukadev Goswami is becoming very enthusiastic because Maharaj Pariksit is asking such enthusiastic questions. And you'll see all the way through the Bhagavad Gita that Maharaj Pariksit, he asks very enthusiastic questions, as do the sages of Naimisharanya, Shaunaka Rishi, and the others to Suta Goswami. About that. So then, the next thing to learn is that bhakti will purify ourselves, will purify us of all our discrepancies. So you'll see that Diti, she approaches Kashyapa and she says that she wants to have a child. But then Kashyapa learns that she wants to have a child because she wants to have a baby that will kill Indra. So then Kashyapa becomes very disturbed. She's approached him, she wants to have a child, he has agreed to give her a child, but now she wants to have the child to kill Indra. So then, in order to counteract her impure consciousness, he says that she must perform Vaishnava Vrats, or she must perform devotional service to purify her consciousness. So just like if devotees want to have children in ISKCON, then what was the standard that Prabhupada gave us? You have to chant minimum of 50 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra before you conceive the child. And in this way you purify your consciousness. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that before you try to conceive, then you should have a festival with all the Vaishnavas. Invite all the Vaishnavas to your home and have a program. Do kirtan, hear the shastra, and then take prasad. When all the Vaishnavas are satisfied, when your home is purified, then you can try to have a child.
When you can manage all these things
for
about 50 rounds, prasad and this and that.
That is your problem.
Not mine.
I'm not saying your problem, I'm saying it is your problem. In general, I'm sorry, it is your problem. So if you want to have children, then this is the system. Prabhupada said there must be 50 rounds. So it means that you have to purify yourself by Vaishnava Vrata, like that. So you'll see even in the Mahabharata that when the princesses, they wanted to have a child, they were instructed to perform purificatory ceremony or purify their consciousness for 1 year before they would conceive a child. That was considered to be the standard. So it means you can't just have a child, you have to purify the consciousness first. So Diti, she wants to have a child, but not really for the right reason. She wants to have a child who will kill Indra. So Kashyapa wants to purify her. So he says, okay, you want a child, then you have to purify your consciousness. Perform Vaishnava Vrats, or engage yourself fully in devotional service. So if you engage yourself in devotional service, what will be the result? All of the impure things will be removed from your heart. All impure qualities. And that is actually the purpose of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you're hearing the Bhagavatam, but the impure qualities are not leaving your consciousness, there is something wrong in your application of the process. Because we see sometimes even devotees who hear the Bhagavatam regularly, but still they have so many strange qualities in their heart. Their behavior is very unpredictable sometimes. So this means there's something wrong in the way they're listening to the Bhagavatam. There's some impure motivation. Because if you're hearing the Bhagavatam properly, impure qualities should be removed from the heart gradually. This is actually the process. The process is devotees should develop good qualities. That is the result of hearing the Bhagavatam. Auspicious qualities will come. Yashasti, Bhakti, Bhagavat, Yakinchana. The Bhagavatam is saying, if you're performing devotional service properly, then impure qualities will be destroyed. You'll develop qualities like a demigod. Auspicious qualities. So Diti is being instructed by Kashyapa. You do these devotional activities, and then you'll purify your consciousness. And actually that's what happened with Diti. She performed devotional service and her impure qualities began to disappear. The next point that Prabhupada makes is that Maya is very powerful because Kashyapa is a great sage, but when he is approached by a beautiful woman, then his determination or his consciousness becomes compromised. So this is the power of Maya. In the Bhagavatam it is described, how does Maya control men? Just through beautiful women. Even if someone is very advanced in devotional service, his determination can be compromised just by a beautiful woman. The Bhagavatam says that even the most powerful man on the earth, the man who has conquered every direction of the earth, that when he comes into the inner chambers of his wife, just by the movement of the eyebrows of the wife, he is conquered. And he lays on his back, and his wife puts her foot on his chest, and she is victorious. Even though he has conquered every other man on the earth. But just by the movement of the eyebrow of the woman, who is Maya personified, then even the most powerful man on the earth can be conquered easily. And she just puts a foot on his chest. You are conquered now. So that is the potency of the material energy. For man, Maya is in the form of the woman. And for the woman, Maya is in the form of a man. So this is the exchange of that. Just like I told you in the past that they did a survey, and they said when they surveyed the men, what was the most important thing that the men looked for in the women?
Beauty.
Yeah, beauty. 8 out of 10 men said that if the woman was beautiful, that was enough. It didn't matter if she was stupid, or if she could not cook, or if she could not write, or it didn't matter any of those things. If she was beautiful, then that's okay. And for the women, what was the most important quality they looked for in the man? Very good job. The most important quality was mullah, money. Right? It didn't matter if he was stupid, if he was ugly, if he came from a bad family, or it didn't matter. As long as he had money, okay, no problem. So 9 out of 10 women said if he was wealthy, then that was the most important quality. So the most important quality that the men were looking for, that is how men are captivated by Maya. By beautiful women, men are captivated. And women are captivated by Maya in the form of men who have wealth, who can facilitate their material desires. Prabhupada says, if the man can give babies, bangles, and saris, then the women are happy. As long as the women can have babies and bangles and saris, then they are happy. Like that. So this is how the women are captured by the material energy, and the men are captured by the material energy in the opposite way. So even Kashyapa was very elevated, but because Diti approached him and she was very beautiful, she destroyed his determination. And then he compromised his devotional activities. We see this all through the Bhagavad Gita. Then the next point, which is made, is that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, it is very difficult for us to see our own faults. Because Diti was accusing Indra of looking in a particular way or acting in a particular way, but as is being pointed out, Diti was acting exactly the same way as Indra. Indra was worried about his position, and Diti was similarly worried about her position. So in the material world, it is very difficult, it is easy for us to find faults in others, but it is very difficult to see faults in ourselves. Right? Generally, this takes a great amount of humility and time and age and experience to see the faults in ourselves. It's easy for us to pick them out in everyone else, but when it comes to ourselves, generally we don't see them so easily. We tend to give ourselves a lot more credit than what we're actually worth. We tend to think that we are more qualified than we actually are. So it's very difficult, actually, to find our own faults. It's easy to find the faults in everyone else. That's easy. But when it comes to as soon as someone mentions one of our faults, we become so defensive. Just one fault is mentioned. Oh, you have this problem. And then immediately. How does someone respond who's in the mode of passion? If someone criticizes us and we're in the mode of passion, then how do we respond?
Your fault.
Yeah, so what about your fault? As soon as someone says something about us, then what do we say? Well, what about you? Right? And we do that most of the time, actually. As soon as someone points out a fault, then what do? We say, yeah, but what about your fault? Like that. So that is the most, if we recognize, because I do that myself, if that takes place, then what do we recognize? We are under the influence of the mode of passion. As Rajagun. If you just immediately respond like that, that's Rajagun. But Sattvagun means that you will be equipoised and you will be introverted. You will contemplate. If someone points out the fault, then you will listen. What is that point that you're trying to make? Maybe this is for my good. Maybe I can learn something and I can improve if I accept your constructive criticism. So that means you're in the mode of goodness. So we have to see now. It's not easy to do that, actually. Just to accept, if someone points out some fault. So any points so far?
Just on that, I heard this that when you raise finger on someone, more fingers are raised toward yourself. So you can learn just by looking at your hand that you raise one finger to someone, but three of your fingers are towards you. So you look in yourself.
Also about the inquiry, like I'm saying that the like only question which is not asked is a stupid question. About the inquiry of the Parikshit Maharaj, like, so always ask question about whatever inquiry you have.
Yeah, make sure it's an intelligent inquiry. Don't waste the spiritual master's time. Prabhupada said, absurd inquiries are condemned. Only ask questions which actually mean something. Any other points?
Good morning, I'm hearing Maharaj's lecture. Maharaj said, you know, regarding this fire, what kind of, he said one statement which was given by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj. Since my heart is honeycombed with many faults, I try to see the faults of others. As a statement, I understood this. But as an activity, I am not able to perform with my own mind. So conquered with passion, all this is happening to me. And what is the remedy for this? I try to praise them, whatever I want to do, but when it comes to controlling my own mind,
so you have to practice. Now you know what the standard is, then you have to rise to the standard. You have to practice the standard. Practice makes perfect. So. Just try it.
I lost my hope.
You lost your hope. Then you should jump in the Ganges.
You know, good thing. I lost that hope as well, but after seeing more of goodness, right, every time it is said, surrender to spiritual master, surrender to spiritual master.
So practice these good qualities. We read about all the good qualities, now practice them.
Do something with yourself. Like one devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I am a fool. Prabhupada said, yes, but do not remain a fool. Any other points?
I think that sometimes when you distribute books on the street, or you preach on the street, it really makes you more incredible.
Okay. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because of their being killed, their mother, Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, contemplated as follows. Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, by means of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Indra is cruel, hard-hearted and sinful. When will I, having killed him, rest with a pacified mind? So, once again, we have to learn this point of resisting retaliation. When someone does something wrong to us, then in the material world and in material consciousness, then we try to retaliate towards that person. If they have offended us in some way, then we try to get back at them in some way. And we carry that within our heart, within our consciousness. So even when one another devotee does something negative to us, or says something negative about us, that in the future, when that devotee is being praised, then we will belittle that devotee. So that is material consciousness. That's what the material world is like. Everyone is trying to bring the other people down. And in devotional service, there can be a great stumbling block if we try to bring the other devotees down. Even if they're not personally present and we're speaking about them to others, but we try to say something negative about them, that just brings our consciousness down. So, in order to progress in Krishna consciousness, we have to become above these negative qualities of looking for the faults in others. Rather, we have to learn to see the good in others. It takes as much energy to point out the negative thing as it does to point out the good thing. So you can use the same amount of energy to destroy your bhakti, vinashati, as you can to progress in your bhakti, prasijati. So in order to progress in bhakti, then we have to learn to point out the good qualities of the other devotees. So here, Aditi, she is doing the same thing as she feels Indra is doing to her. So that means she has the same disease as Indra. She thinks that Indra is envious of me, but if you think someone is envious of me, but then you act towards them in an envious way, you are no better than them. You're just committing the same fault that they committed. So any points?
I think in the chanting, like one of the rules is being a humble mind and not saying a force and being like a grass and that's how that period is like. What we achieve it, and then probably that gives us strength for the rest of the day. And then again we chant and keep on continuing. And then we increase our tolerance.
Yeah, you have to practice this mentality.
In Melbourne, what I've seen is people have a very good attitude of appreciating and glorifying devotees, especially in Bangalore, where so many boys live there and birthdays are celebrated. And every time, like in the fields around the town, there is always some birthday going on in the town where devotees are glorified. It creates a mood like the community as well. And wonderful
actually. Very few places they found this. Someone is always making cake and you don't even know who's making that cake from this cake. It's a time where 6 cakes made in one day. A lot of things. But I think my birthday cake was the best. I didn't see any cake as good as that one. And everyone said it tasted the best also. I don't even know who made it there, but very good cake. Any other points? Okay. So read one more verse. Okay. When dead, the bodies of all the rulers, known as kings and great leaders, will be transformed into worms, stool, or ashes. If one enviously kills others for the protection of such a body, does he actually know the true interest of life? Certainly he does not. For if one is envious of other entities, he surely goes to hell.
The material body, even if possessed by a great king, is ultimately transformed into stone, bones, or ashes. And one is too attached to the bodily conception of life, he is certain not to be healthy.
Any points here? So, we should understand things in their proper perspective. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. The message of the Bhagavatam is life is short. Life is temporary. So do not become carried away with petty material things, and especially quarrels and conflicts with other devotees. It is not worth it. It does nothing for you or for the other devotee or for your consciousness. Just like one devotee was telling me today, they had some problem with another devotee. So they said, I had this problem, we said this, and then they had that problem, they said that. And then my conclusion was, it wasn't very important. We tend to take our problems so importantly and make such a big deal out of our problems. And if someone says something to us, we say, oh, that's such a big thing. But if you tell that same thing to another person, another devotee, they automatically put it back into perspective. This is just such an insignificant thing. Just like from Lord Brahma's position, when he looks down on us, and he sees us two devotees having an argument, how does Lord Brahma think? He thinks it's not very important. Just like if we're here, and we're looking down at the ants on the ground, how do we think? Two of the ants are having a big fight. They're having a big argument together. Right? And what do we think? Yeah, we just think those poor creatures. When we look at the ants, you say, Hare Baba. It's not such a big deal. Just get on with your life. Like that. So, we get so caught up in our little arguments with other devotees. Oh, this happened and that happened and they said that to me and we did like that. But it's not very important. It's very insignificant, actually. And it's not worth destroying relationships over. And it's not worth putting great emphasis on. So if there's some discrepancy with another devotee, then we should finish that very quickly. We should make some adjustment, or we should make some cure for the situation very quickly. If two devotees are having an argument, then we should try to... Actually, it happened earlier today as well. I heard that two devotees were not talking, and they were very good friends in the past. Actually, I knew they were very good friends. But I found out today that they were not talking to each other anymore. So I went to both of them, I found both of them, and I said, what's going on? I said, why aren't you talking anymore? And they said, oh, this happened and that happened. And I went to the other devotees and said, why aren't you talking? And I said, oh, that happened and that happened. So I said, I want you to fix this. Go together and speak about and fix this situation. It's not good. Devotees should not be like that. Okay. So they're very insignificant situations. So don't take this life so seriously. In other words, do not develop these petty quarrels or petty, trivial situations with other devotees. Because what will happen to our body? Huh? Yeah, it is going to be eaten by worms, it's going to be eaten by dogs, or it's going to be burnt in their crematorium fire. So that's all that's going to happen. So why do we take it so seriously? Right. If that's how we're all going to end, then why do we take this world so seriously? We take it all seriously, but it's not worth doing that. Devotees should not get into these arguments together. Okay. Any more points?
Shoot
the problem.
That's what the disciples were saying on.
Yes,
shoot the problem.
Sometimes it's understand
as
leave it, just leave it.
Leave the problem.
Yeah, go just leave it.
Leave the problem. Yeah, that's the intelligent thing to do. Very good. So we now set a point.
Like, I want to ask you, like, shouldn't devotees take responsibility for daily basis? They have to take responsibility. How we can go into outside world and see if these are not behaving properly. How we go and say the rituals of the day. If we have to also learn the principle of equality, then we have to take the responsibility and say, we have to develop kindness and caring and affection for the devotees and look after them. If we should develop these qualities, if we do not develop these qualities, then how we are going to convert the materials to the devotees? They already have all those qualities, that qualities, and then if you also exhibit the same that quality, How you are going to go and preach to them. If you are going to go and preach to the other devotees, you should develop first the good qualities. Then only you can go out and preach to other devotees. Otherwise, not. It's trivial, but the Maya will always see how the devotee is behaving. One person is being judged. Krishna's judging every person based on how they behave in a particular lifetime, based on that only they have been awarded the next body, or they have been taken birth to Godhead.
So the behavior of the devotee is very, very important towards other devotees and towards everybody else also. It is very important whether the devotee has to behave
talking about your husband.
No, no,
Any other points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada.